The views expressed in this episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio aren't necessarily the true opinions of the individuals in the prosecution or the defense. But for the sake of debate, it's time to go to court. Hello everyone and welcome to the 71st Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening all.
Luke Edwards.
Scrambling for the microphone. Hello!
Carl Jones.
My grand slam was supposed to be with sausage.
And G. John Chase.
God, who woke him up?
And we are back this week for our sixth trial in the Squared Circle Gazette court case series. And this time we have one, Phil Brooks, CM Punk on the stand. Before we get going with this week's trial episode, I just want to give a quick thank you to all of our loyal listeners, because last month, the month of January, we once again broke our all-time listenership record. So a big thank you and a tip of the cap to all of you out there who listen to Squared Circle Gazette Radio. You can, of course, listen to any of our previous trials at squaredcirclegazette.com, where we archive every show, or follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/scgradio, or, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes to make sure you never miss a show.
And they'll want to, because after all, we are an award-winning podcast.
Thank you for reminding everybody, G, the award-winning Squared Circle Gazette Radio. Thank you. Moving now, this is actually going to be fun for me because this is my first time as the judge here in Squared Circle Gazette Radio Court. Just to introduce the teams first and foremost, we have, on the prosecution, the most fearsome legal team since Jerry McDivitt and Laura Brevetti got Vince off scot-free, we have Kieran O'Rourke and Carl Jones.
As a defence specialist, I've really gone out of my comfort zone to take on this charlatan that is one Philip Brooks.
And on the defence, we have the dynamic duo of Luke Edwards and G. John Chase. The charge, of course, is CM Punk is on the stand for fraud and misrepresentation in that he and his WWE career didn't live up to all of the hype, both from the internet and his own self-promotion, surrounding him going in and throughout his run. So that is what we have today. I feel we should throw this over first to the prosecution. We have the opening statements at hand, gentlemen. And just of course for the benefit of the listeners, I'm not going to be judging this on my own personal opinion. I'm going to be judging this based on the merit of the arguments presented here today in court. So with that said, let's get rolling with the opening statement of the prosecution.
Thank you very much, Judge. Phil Brooks, CM Punk, overrated. Today we'll demonstrate he is guilty. The defence will no doubt try to divert the conversation in that the claims of being best in the world were just PR. Just him promoting himself as a wrestler. But we'll prove, through examining his work rate, his promos, and his general business acumen, he ain't all that.
Phil Brooks is a narcissist of the first degree. Like James Jones before him, Charles Manson.
Oh.
You can reel off the names, Your Honour. All cult leaders, leading people on a merry dance just to leave them bitterly disappointed and with a trail of broken tears. Far from being the best in the world, Your Honour, we will demonstrate that Mr. Phil Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, is more nothing from nowhere, he's no one at all.
Oh, lovely! We now throw this over to the defence. Luke Edwards and G. John Chase for their opening statement to defend CM Punk on the charge of fraud and misrepresentation.
Your Honour, CM Punk could not be here today to defend himself, which we all know he would love to be if he could, but he has many important things to do in his important life. Certainly more important than sitting around this grand oaken table with these two reprobates calling him names as what passes for a prosecution in this day and age. CM Punk doesn't have to be here today because he does not have to defend himself. This charge is completely ridiculous, overblown beyond measure. Frankly, I am, while at risk of being in contempt of court, have complete contempt for this prosecution team and their attempt to argue the most ridiculous concept that has ever been put before me on this podcast. When you look in my eyes, what do you see? And I think, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to leave it at that.
So, with the opening statements out of the way, gentlemen, let's touch now on the prosecution. What do you have in store to try and prove that CM Punk is, in fact, guilty of this charge?
Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to break down Punk into three generic categories of work rate, promos, and his business acumen, because he considers himself, you know, a smart guy to the business, and he looks down upon other people's opinions, particularly when they're not in his favour. These are three fluid categories which may overlap and incorporate other elements. To start with, we want to preface the charge of best in the world. It's easy to say, okay, that was just a slogan, catchphrase, that's not on trial, but it is. In his interview with Colt Cabana in 2014, I believe, he says specifically, everything he said, he believed. All the hype about himself, he truly believed. He felt he was a star on the level of Brock Lesnar and The Rock, and he said to Vince McMahon, if you don't consider me on that, fire me, because that's what I'm here to be. He also equates himself and Daniel Bryan to Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, putting himself as an elite performer. To start with, then, we're going to look at work rate. As we said, he compares himself to Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, an elite performer. And hey, look, he's had some really good matches, but I'm not going to take that away from him. The Undertaker at WrestleMania, obviously Money in the Bank with Cena, Brock Lesnar, SummerSlam. Really good matches, but make no mistake about it, he wasn't solely responsible for those matches, and his consistency when not in with top guys is, quite frankly, not on the top guy level. Let's look at those three matches as examples. Taker at Mania, great match, no doubt about it, but it is squarely framed in the pretext of it to take a streak on the line match. That aids that match. That's fantastic. Nothing against Punk in that. You know, not taken away from him. It's a great performance. There are extenuating circumstances which aided him. Cena Money in the Bank again, the gimmick of the time frame, helped the match immensely in the crowd. And it's Cena. Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Come on, that's Brock Lesnar's match. All throughout his interview with Colt Cabana, he, though, takes sole responsibility for these performances. I had the match of the night. I had the best match at WrestleMania. It's this egocentric attitude that he is responsible for all the successes of the matches he's in. Simply not the case. And as I say, in terms of consistency, when he's not in with elite talents or in favourable situations, he underperforms. He has mundane matches. I mean, you consider that to John Cena's US title run, for Christ's sake. You know, stellar matches week in, week out. And no one's calling John Cena the best in-ring performer in the world in a consistency basis. I think it's an easy argument. It's not the argument for today, but I think it's an easy argument to make that Cena's a much more consistent in-ring performer than CM Punk. Mechanically, I said it before and I'll say it again, Punk has the gait of a girl. He prances around the ring with no athletic intensity whatsoever. His strikes are embarrassing. And do we really need to mention that elbow drop?
Sloppy. Sloppy, I think, is a suitable word, my co-prosecutor would agree.
It's generous.
Bearing in mind that this was a tribute to a deceased man, a Hall of Famer, no less, for him to perpetuate that elbow drop on the wrestling audience is shameful.
I would say inflict that elbow drop on the wrestling audience, quite frankly. And while, again, we may say, okay, a bit of sloppiness, so what, that doesn't affect the overall quality of the match? It does, on a consistent basis. And not only that, when he projects himself as this hybrid fighter coming in with his Vanderlei Silver wrist roll, and his strikes are embarrassing.
Just to elaborate on that, and going back to this suggestion of best in the world, obviously that's what we're putting it up against when we talk about his career meeting the hype.
That's what he
says. He frames it himself as the best
that's
in the world.
That's how he frames it.
His own words. To have the sort of traits that Mr. Punk has, would you equate that to being best in the world? I don't think so.
Look on his face. Some interesting points made, gentlemen. I would now like to throw over to the defence for their rebuttal to the claims of CM Punk as a sloppy wrestler.
Where did you get this idea that Punk believes that him and Daniel Bryan are the Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels?
It was the Colt Cabana interview.
Because I think that you're almost right there, but I think what he was actually saying in that is that he said that when Vince wanted to try and book him and Brian together, he said that he shouldn't, because they're more like the Bret and Shawn, as in they should only work together every now and again when needed. It was more just a suggestion booking-wise of don't just waste a match on us, just doing it for a throwaway pay-per-view. Save it for special occasions every now and again.
Context.
Yeah.
He didn't literally form a sentence saying, I am a better wrestler than this historical figure, that historical figure. And indeed, one of the major points I want to try to keep the prosecution on here, your main thing you were talking about just then were about two historical wrestling figures. At that moment, at that time, best in the world. Now, does best in the world mean just the WWE? Of course not. It could not be represented in that way, correct? I think that maybe we could agree that best in the world would mean best in the world at that current time.
Absolutely, but that's exactly where the Brett and Sean comparison comes in, because he equates himself and Brian as in the same situation in the hierarchical structure at that time as Brett and Sean.
Mm-hmm. The point we're trying to make, if we're really talking about work rate here, okay, I want you to look at WWE matches around that time, 2011. Does Punk throw a sloppy top rope elbow? There are many, many things I will defend about Phil Brooks, but that sloppy top rope elbow ain't winning him any UFC matches anytime soon. But many wrestlers have things that they do. Great wrestlers, people who people could argue were the best in the world at any given moment, do have individual motions or moves that could be described as terrible because no one's perfect.
Like what? Like who?
Like what? Okay.
STFU.
Well, if you're going to do him, you do the springboard stunner, which is just fucking horrible.
Yeah. We acknowledge Cena. What's Brett's weakness? What's Sean's weakness?
Sean's weakness, he has certainly, in more than one occasion, done, I would argue, damage to a match with overselling. Frankly, he oversells the match to a ludicrous degree, which detracts from the match as a whole. As an example. Okay.
Is that a commonly held belief?
I don't know.
It's not a belief I hold.
But the point is, everything we're talking about today is opinion. But in any form of work rate, even someone who has... I mean, I would say that, you know, if you want to talk about people with high opinion of themselves, yes, absolutely, CM Punk does. You have to have, to a certain degree, a very high opinion of yourself to reach that point in any profession. Whereas CM Punk has a huge opinion of himself, same as, I mean, Bret Hart. I find Bret Hart's book very difficult to read, because while he is that good, his opinion of himself is just beyond anything. Yes, I'm not arguing high opinion of themselves. However, perfection is not a requirement to be the best in the world. Certainly not in 2011.
Was he a better worker than Daniel Bryan in 2011?
That's a very good question. Now, obviously, Daniel Bryan in 2011 didn't have as many classic matches, did he? But is that Daniel Bryan's fault in the context? Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, you think about matches in that period. CM Punk had some phenomenal matches. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, 2011. That show... What was interesting about that show, because I watched some of it leading up to this, and it's also mentioned in The Observer around that time, which is that the show was elevated by the build towards the main event. So much so that as you head into that main event, you feel it's never going to live up to that expectation, especially because it's a fucking Money in the Bank. You know, it's not SummerSlam, it's not WrestleMania, and yet that main event delivered.
I wish to sort of bring this back just a little bit. On the basis of just going back to the elbow drop and talking about this nature of all wrestlers having weaknesses. No one would dispute wrestlers having weaknesses. No one would dispute other wrestlers having bad matches. But the point here is, CM Punk was sloppy, but CM Punk put himself in this bracket of best in all, so therefore I feel it's only fair to criticise weaknesses he portrays and put them to a higher standard than other wrestlers. Now, on the subject of the Money in the Bank, just quickly, it was a good show, but you have to look at extenuating circumstances. Does that pay-per-view mean as much as it quote-unquote does? We'll get to that later. If it's not for the foil that is John Cena, is the reaction and everything that makes the night what it is as good if it's not for the fact that it happens to be in Chicago? Now, CM Punk there, on the basis of that show, in that arena on that night, benefits from the convenience of the calendar, not from his own personal ability.
In that instance, yeah, it always takes two to tango. Obviously, you've always got time and so on and so forth to take into account. However, I will say that if you were to remove one person from that match, which would be the greater detriment to the match, John Cena's role in both the storyline and the match could have been someone else.
I would disagree on the basis that the whole build was framed on the way that John Cena was the guy, the quote-unquote New York Yankees, the Empire.
But
there. Further to that point, I think the John Cena's recent US title run also proves that point. The visceral response his matches got week in, week out, mm-hmm, to wanting to see him lose that title backs up Carl's point, I think, though.
I personally find with the Money in the Bank match, if... I think you could almost slot Triple H in there in some regard. There's the possibility of just, like, you know, you are the person that the company has built themselves around. Today it would be Roman Reigns. Back then it would be, you know, John Cena. Or, like I say, Triple H. But the counterculture figure that makes those words, that goes up against them, it could have only been punk during that period. And you couldn't, there's no one on the roster who could do it today. And I would therefore argue, if you remove him from the match and him from the build-up, it is a greater loss than taking Cena out of the same position.
A promo on Raw is one thing. A verbal statement on a podcast, which, however much the defence like to suggest, it's only a small podcast, it's a public forum. It's the individual, it's almost the emperor's got no clothes sort of thing. It's the real life basis for a statement that Mr. Punk makes there.
You see, what we've got is, if we completely ignore the Raw, the stuff that happens on Raw, at the end of the day, Vince has permitted it. You know, it is scripted to what a greater or lesser extent. Now, if he's sitting there on the podcast thinking, I'm broadcasting this to the world, which he probably was overall. I mean, yes, he was talking to a friend, but he's also broadcasting the world. He's not turned off. He's a showman.
What's he promoting?
He's promoting himself.
What's he selling?
He's selling himself, the brand of CM Punk that still continues as we move into UFC. CM Punk hasn't wrestled in, when was the last? Royal Rumble 2014, and CM Punk going to the UFC is still a thing because of what he does outside of the thing. He's selling himself all the time. The character is CM. It's not fucking Phil Brooks going to UFC, is it? It's CM Punk going to UFC. He's still a character. I cannot, therefore, you demonstrate that is really what he believes in himself, because he's got to show off that he's the best in the world. When he gets to UFC, he will tell you he is the best mixed martial artist in the world. I fucking guarantee you.
This case is about how he presents himself to the fans. And yeah, while I agree, I said from the start that the catchphrase of best in the world taken in the wrestling bubble when he's promoting on TV or wherever. Yeah, we're not saying that, but when he substantiates that in a public forum, away from the business, which is presenting as the truth, he's representing himself as telling the truth, and he specifically says, I believed everything I said, and then he substantiates that and goes into more detail, that's fraud, that's misrepresentation.
I would like to divert the defence's attention to another point that the prosecution made there, because I think that it's worth dwelling on, where they specifically noted these isolated moments, such as WrestleMania with Undertaker, Money in the Bank with Cena, SummerSlam with Brock, is the exception to the CM Punk rule. Well, I'd like to know your stance on that, and whether you think that this is an unfair assessment that CM Punk's regular matches are mundane, in their words.
Obviously, when you go in into matches like the ones you said, where he's going in with John Cena and Brock Lesnar and Undertaker, obviously they've got a certain skill set, which at the very least they can match CM Punk. But looking outside of it, you know, when you look outside those big matches, yeah, he did have a brief feud with Daniel Bryan in the spring of one of the years. I can't quite recall. I think was it 2013 and stuff. But also outside of those big money shows, he also had to work with people who weren't quite as skilled. People like Ryback, for instance, with the prosecution referencing the podcast and things that CM Punk says. In that podcast, he also states that the reason why he worked with Ryback was Vince wanted him to work with Ryback because he told him that he needed to carry him. He knew that Ryback was too green to be in the main event and said, I need you to work with him because I need you to carry him through. If we're to go by what CM Punk has said in the podcast, then CM Punk turning around and saying that that's what Vince told him, that Vince believes, you know, that he was as good as that to carry someone that's as green as Ryback, that's surely a testament in itself as to how good CM Punk actually is.
But if the man is the best in the world, he clearly failed on that night because he didn't carry Ryback to a good match.
When CM Punk debuted under the WWE umbrella in ECW, he wrestled a lot of matches, but he had next to no promo time. Okay? He had very little promo time during that early part. And he got himself over. Now, it was under, I believe, Heyman's for most of that, which is fair, because he was booked solidly, but not amazingly. He wasn't a Brock Lesnar push or anything like that. But he got himself over consistently, and he wasn't having the promo time. He was getting himself over with work rate. And a lot of those people he was wrestling then weren't these top-level talent that we're talking about in the later years, in the 2011 and so on. And he was able to get himself over. He was able to have good, solid, maybe better in a few cases, matches with people that we don't think about anymore as big players in wrestling. And that even continued as he moved from ECW to the main roster. He was in the Money in the Bank matches, which is specifically designed for that kind of person. Didn't he have a really quite a good match with Ryback? And people, wasn't he the guy where people thought, oh, Ryback, oh, maybe Ryback's actually fairly decent? Wasn't that around that time? After like one match and then everyone, oh, right, yeah, he's not. Because Punk carried him, and that demonstrates that Punk could carry a guy like Ryback, who... I could be misremembering this, but I know there was something like that with Ryback, with someone, I'm pretty sure it was CM Punk. But anyway, the point is that he had a long career in WWE, and a lot of that was getting himself over by having better work rate than, arguably, anyone else having repeated matches on the roster, given that, I mean, yes, Daniel Bryan was an excellent wrestler, but during that period, that was the whole fucking Tough Enough shit, so, or NXT, whatever it was. I don't see how it can be argued that it was only because he was having great matches with great workers.
But I think this is the point we're getting to here. Punk, was he above average? Yeah. We're not here to argue that, though. We're here to argue his fraudulent claims. His fraudulent claims that he was the best. And he just simply wasn't. Fraud!
We're going to move along now to some of the witness statements from you, the fantastic listeners. We're going to start with Pat Dooley, who on the Facebook page says, "The first wave of a revolution is never as good as what follows. Without Billy Graham, there'd be no Hulk Hogan and probably no 80s boom. Without CM Punk, I fully believe that the future of WWE would look vastly different. Without the pipe bomb and the summer of Punk, would we have seen the influx of indie talent to both NXT and the main roster? Hard to say, as Daniel Bryan was on the rise around the same time, but Punk, without a doubt, showed that guys like him could carry a show. Is he as great as he says he was? Probably not. Although he was the most entertaining thing on the roster for most of his run. Was he as great as the hype made him out to be? No, because when you're touted as the second coming, there's no option but to fall short. Does that make him a fraud? In the letter of the law as you've outlined, maybe it does. But considering that he was a major bright spot amid a sea of crap for the span of several years, it's very hard to argue with his initial hype saying that he was going to stand out, because that's exactly what he did. Tiger Rick on the UK fan forum says, "The first time I saw Punk, I saw a skinny, ugly, wannabe wrestler with shit tattoos and worse hair. If you told me that he'd go on to be the world champion in WWE for over a year, be in tons of main events, and be genuinely over as a mainstream act, I'd have suggested you were on crack. He could talk, that was always obvious, and his work was alright if you liked that obviously choreographed shite, but he had nothing at all about him that suggested he'd reach the heights he did, so from that point of view, I think he massively overachieved. I think he's guilty of hypocrisy. He's all about the money and the fame. That's fine, I've no issue with it, unless you strenuously deny it. His big run was built on him not being that guy, but as soon as he was offered that guy's wedge, he quickly fell into line. He's got some just complaints about never being in a WrestleMania main event, given his standing in the company over several years. I'm not sure when he realistically would have got it, though, although I think the answer, it's fucking now! Supersonic on the F4W board says, "The man's only remaining goal was to headline WrestleMania. His absence left a major star power void, still felt 2 years later. If that's not living up to the hype, then nothing is." Joe G on Pro Wrestling Only says, "I went to a number of indie shows from 2001 to 2004, back when he was making his underground indie rep. Never once was he the best guy on the show, and never once was he in the best match. He far exceeded my expectations of what he would do in WWE. At that last show in Philly for Ring of Honor, where we had a time limit draw with Daniels, people were chanting boring, and I was wondering how the fuck is this guy going to make it in WWE. His WWE career truly exceeded all of my wildest expectations." John on the F4W boards, to kind of go along that line, says, "He was the best thing about the show, by miles, and it hasn't been as good since he left. Crap Game 13 on F4W says, "He always did better than they slotted him to do. He was a success." Loss from Pro Wrestling Only says, "CM Punk was a massive overachiever. I don't see how anyone could think he didn't live up to the hype. What hype was there even? I don't really recall any at all. What did people expect he'd be able to do that he didn't, other than headline WrestleMania? He became a bona fide top guy, and worked with everyone who was around during his run, which is a pretty big leap from starting off facing lots of criticism from Triple H and Shawn, his wrestling style looked too simulated." There's a bit of a mixed bag there of different thoughts, but it's getting back to the crux of the charge here, the hype and the misrepresentation, perhaps, from the prosecution's standpoint, of what he was for the hype going in, and his own hype throughout the course of his career. I'd like to know what both sides think about CM Punk's rep coming in, and if what he was justified that reputation, or was that a disappointment as well, in the opinion of the prosecution?
For me, this, you know, I've watched the Joe Punk series, which got a lot of acclaim, and the positioning of himself as this, you know, different hybrid, the mixed martial arts element to him and stuff. Oh, I was a fan. I enjoyed his stuff. Throughout, I did, but I always felt he was not what he thought he was. He wasn't as good as other people thought he was. Joe was the star of their feud. He had a unique look and a unique charisma, which helped him throughout. Similar in a very different way, obviously, to Jeff Hardy. We'll get onto this point later on. But for me, his shortcomings just held him back from what he projected himself to be throughout.
When Punk, you know, kind of first signed with WWE, I think there was certainly an expectation from the fans that actually knew who he was anyway, the people who did watch Ring of Honor. And, you know, obviously he had some mild expectations himself. But obviously, anyone that's kind of worth their weight has a certain degree of confidence in themselves. I mean, he references Steve Austin quite often, with Steve Austin saying, like, to be in this business, you want to be the champion. You want to be a champion. If you don't want to be a champion, then fuck off out of the company. What he means by being champion is being the best person in the company, that the company's going to turn around and say, we're going to put money on you because you're the best. And that's, no matter whether you're a good promo, good work rate, hopefully all the above. With CM Punk, I'm sure that he had enough belief in himself that he thought he could get up there if given enough chance. You know, he's doing is perpetuating what Austin would say. When it comes to, obviously, the internet, the fans that did watch Ring of Honor, they obviously did have some high expectations. But I also think that there was also a bit of trepidation as well, because at that point, when he signed, it was, what year was it? It was 2005 when he signed. At this point, obviously, there was no WCW, there is no real alternative companies outside of TNA. I think CM Punk was the first named indie guy to get signed for quite a while. Up until then, all the previous years, it was always ex-WCW star or ex-ECW star that he kept bringing in. You know, this is the first name of all the, you know, the Daniel Bryans, Samoa Joes, AJ Styles, many people who didn't turn up for ages. If he's given a fair shake of the stick in WWE, then he could succeed, because he does have a lot of great traits to him. But I think a lot of people were kind of worried whether he would get those opportunities. And I think the fact that he eventually did get those opportunities is testament to how good CM Punk is in the ring and also on the mic and so on. So it's just the fact that he had to kind of build himself up to, you know, a place where he could fulfill what Austin has always told everybody, which is to be the best.
Now, he didn't start claiming best in the world until a long way into his time there. The hype going in, as we've heard now from the listeners, was mixed, because a lot of people had high hopes, but not high expectations. I mean, the problem we have, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day, is that the prosecution is breaking things down in such a way as to make sure that you don't get the full picture. Now, Chris Benoit, best wrestler in the world? Best technical wrestler in the world? Certainly there was a point. But, so yes, for work rate, absolutely. The moment you put a stick in front of him. So when you start breaking things down in steps, a man does not have to be the best at every individual aspect to be the best wrestler in the world. And as we now move on to allow the prosecution to examine our next point, we want to make it clear that it should not be expected that a professional wrestler should be at the top of every element of the game.
Just really quick, just want to reiterate the point. He claimed he was the best at everything. In every
on
category.
A podcast where he was playing CM Punk, himself as CM Punk.
Okay. On a podcast,
yes,
where he'd attempted to frame everything as his coming clean about why he left the company, putting his heart on his sleeve, his true emotions, true feelings.
You're describing the pipe bomb on Raw, aren't you? Where he let his free emotions and what he thought about things. That's it, yes! That was on Raw. That was fake as well.
He was selling something that day.
Exactly.
He wasn't selling anything when he left the company.
He did it in countless promos after Money in the Bank. We will get to Money in the Bank, Your Honour.
Okay. A little bit of order in the court here, gentlemen. As much as I would like to move to the next one, there's a couple more bits of witness statements that I would like to get to very quickly before we move on to the next topic. These were aimed more towards the defence. Air Raid on the UK fan forum says, I'm going to give Punk a not guilty based on the initial charge, which was the hype going in on to his WWE tenure. I remember the time and the level of buzz around Punk very strongly, having been into ROH when he first showed up, and retrospectively checking out a lot of the Raven feud through what aired on the Wrestling Channel, then buying a stack of 2004 DVDs in early 2005. I was gutted that that he was leaving ROH, as I felt sure he'd amount to nothing in WWE, or at least that he'd be radically different from the CM Punk I had become a fan of, both as a wrestler and as a character. Nobody in their right mind interpreted any of the rantings of the ROH bots to be genuine, this guy is going to be a massive star hype. Punk's delivery for me far outweighed what people expected of him going in. No, he did not go on last at WrestleMania. However, he won the belt, the proper belt, 3 times, defended it at WrestleMania, wrestled The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and was permitted, regardless of circumstance, to beat most of the top guys of the era, including Cena, Undertaker, Edge, Chris Jericho, and others on TV. At the time of his signing, for me that surely represents an overachievement in respect to the hype surrounding him by impartial wrestling fans, as opposed to just from those trapped in the ROH bubble. That being, he's done pretty well for himself, he might be something special, let's see what they do with him. I say he lived up to the hype just fine. However, since the brief also mentions his own hype, and refers to throughout, I'd be forced to change my opinion to guilty. If we're going to talk about throughout, then there is no avoiding the fact that the cunt openly referred to himself as the best in the world, and honestly, that's going way over the top. From the moment he started pulling that out during the summer of work shoots, all the way through to his post-Rumble leaving in a huff, it's a real tough argument to say that he was the best at any given period. Not to say he didn't have some great matches, but throughout any of those times, you're always going to find someone that was consistently knocking out better matches than Punk, whether you want to look at Hiroshi Tanahashi, John Cena, Daniel Bryan, or AJ Styles. I genuinely can't say there are any periods in Punk's WWE career where I could say, fair enough, you're the best. And while I'm just one guy, I think that's the popular opinion. Punk could never live up to his own level of hype. The best in the world would at least have been in that Mania main event instead of The Miz, surely to Christ. Except he wasn't. Or at least he wasn't good enough to convince enough of the right people that he was. So on that count, guilty.
I've always liked that air raid.
We have already agreed as a court that pushing oneself as whatever one might describe themselves on Raw in front of any time when one is trying to publicize themselves is not necessarily to be taken completely literally. Okay? And a lot of people seem to be getting stuck on this this whole best in the world thing, and I don't want the whole podcast to be around this, even though it looks like it might be, because if we do, we'll have to charge Mark Henry for being the world's strongest man. We'll have to charge Steve Austin for claiming to be a no-limbed reptilian.
Objection, Your Honor, those men listed there by the defense are not on trial today.
I've never heard Mark Henry cut a shoot promo where he claimed, oh, yeah, I actually am the strongest man in the world.
Would you listen to a Mark Henry shoot promo?
That is irrelevant.
I have information here of one particular competition where he did in fact place higher in a particular competition than the current world's strongest man. Now, he didn't win that competition. It was that the current world's strongest man was lower, and it was from then on that he was proclaimed to be the world's strongest man by both himself and, indeed, technically his agent. So, in the same vein, he was not, but he was promoting himself as if he was, and it almost in the case of, oh, well, you know, an argument could be made. Well, I believe people could make the argument for CM Punk, whereas I don't believe that best in the world can be verified under any circumstances when it comes to professional wrestling.
In which case, if it can't be verified, he's still fraudulently promoting himself as such.
When he, how about when he proclaims to Vince McMahon, if you don't see me as a par with the other top stars,
yes,
then fire me, because that's the only reason. That's what I'm here to be.
Yes, that's what he's here to be, and I hope he attained that.
So that was, well, we'll come on to that.
Exactly, I know where you're going.
We're not knocking his drive. His drive, yeah, probably was world class, but his abilities weren't.
We now move to the second portion of the prosecution's argument.
Thank you very much. Part two, promos. Okay, we're not here to debate that CM Punk at his best was a really entertaining promo. You know, at his best, obviously the pipe bomb, wildly entertaining. But then, the bigger point here is, what's a promo? The word itself, to promote, to lead to numbers, ratings, buy rate, and throughout his history, Punk has not been a number mover. And I think my colleague, my esteemed colleague, Mr. Carl Jones, will now provide the evidence.
Thank you, my learned colleague. Just to elaborate slightly on statements that Punk has made, we talked earlier about best in the world. Another way in which he liked to frame the latter part of his career was about being a game changer. He couldn't change the state of the company, sat on his couch in Chicago, was the way in which he phrased it. So, how much of a game changer really was Punk? A lot of people like to look at the vaunted promo that he cut leading to Money in the Bank and like to refer to the Summer of Punk. Let's just look at these numbers, shall we? If we look at the last Raw in June of 2011, the night that CM Punk cut his infamous pipe bomb promo, the rating is a 3.1. The exact same number as the previous 2 weeks. We then move forward to the following week. Think about it, the buzz coming out of that promo, how significant it is, how much of an impact that promo is going to make and jazz up interest in the product. 2.4.
Ooh.
How much of it was really just internet wrestling community buzz?
Exactly.
So let's go a bit further. The 11th of July, Raw 2011, a 2.9 rating. Almost recovered from the crash of the previous week, but not quite. This is coming off the infamous contract renegotiation with Vince McMahon, where CM Punk is given the platform of 25 minutes. Oh. To talk about how wonderful he is, how he is the voice of the voiceless, who is going to hold McMahon to task. And surely, you know, this is a great promo. This is going to be fantastic.
It's got to be driving numbers, Carl.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that 2.9, yeah.
2.9.
Still down from the infamous pipe bomb, oof, which only matched the numbers of the two Raws that preceded that.
Oh, not a lot of change there, then, isn't there?
So then,
I'm sorry, just out of curiosity, the 2.4, could you please provide the date for that again?
July 4th.
Okay.
But then let's get to the buzz coming out of Money in the Bank on July 18th of that year. The title changed hands in Chicago. It was a great show, an extravaganza. What's going to happen? What's going to happen with the belt? Punk's gone. My God, he could show up in Ring of Honor, he could show up anywhere. How's Vince going to react? What will the company do to strike back? All those questions. You'd expect a significant bump coming out of that pay-per-view, wouldn't you? 3.2.
Oh, dear.
Well, my God, isn't that just astronomical?
God, changing the world one ratings point at a time.
My God. By this rate, you know, they might get to a 4 in about 12 years.
But, Carl, that's just TV rate. Surely there's some other metric we can go off. How about pay-per-view numbers?
Funny you should mention that. Because let's just see... let's just see how much of a... long impact, if you like, this Punk promo had. Or in fact, we can just look at it in the context of the summer, if you'd like, because it was the summer of Punk.
Well, if he's such a great promo, he's got to be promoting something really well that's going to sell some shit.
Well, let's get to Money in the Bank. Now, it would be remiss of us to say that the pay-per-view didn't do decently. It did. It improved on the previous year. I will give it the great big thumbs up of 195,000 buys. That's a reasonable jump, I suppose. 31,000 off the back of 2010, the previous year. Did it have legs, though?
Let's take this forward, Carl. Take it forward.
Let's go forward. To the next big show. What the company have sometimes judged as their second biggest pay-per-view, in truth, probably their third biggest pay-per-view on the calendar? SummerSlam. Though I suppose for this one, you could just call it SummerSham.
Oh, dear. Punk's back. There must be such a buzz. He's promoting these things so well with these promos.
Oh, wonderful. The 2011 SummerSlam buy rate? 296,000 buys. What was that I hear people ask? What was the buy rate for the previous year? Bearing in mind that the 2011 one, it's the return to the ring of CM Punk. Title unification match with John Cena.
What was it the year before, Carl? Pray tell.
349,000 buys.
It's down.
Just like CM Punk should be.
So I think the point we're getting to here is while he is entertaining to his existing fan base, in terms of promoting the product, encouraging buys, encouraging ratings, he doesn't move numbers. So how good a promo can he be?
You'll notice, ladies and gentlemen, that they didn't really touch much on the actual promos there. They touched on the money things, which doesn't just come off promos. You know, pay-per-views obviously are not ever solely based around one person, and certainly not solely based on promos. But anyway, if we're gonna talk numbers, just I'm gonna put a few things, obviously, that they were trying to mislead you into perspective. Obviously, the show that CM Punk cut the pipe bomb promo, there was no lead into that. No one knew it was coming. It was the last, I think it's like 8 minutes of the show, yeah, out of fucking nowhere on a shitty Raw Roulette show. When it's that late in, even if a million people tune in, your ratings aren't moving that much for the whole show. So that can't be taken into account. The next week's Raw was, as we've seen, July 4th. Now, the previous time that it was July 4th had a much bigger drop. It was previously 2005 that they had a July 4th Raw, and the drop was significantly steeper. So in 2005, the one before July 4th was a 4.4, and it dropped to a 2.6. Okay, and in 2011, it went from a 3-point-something to 2.4. It was a less steep drop. It's always going to drop on July 4th, because it's fucking July 4th. Pay-per-view numbers. It's a general downslide with... I mean, obviously, we can accept that Money in the Bank was higher, because it was a great angle. Stemmed mostly from promos by CM Punk, I think we can all agree. The SummerSlam was down on the previous year, which was down on the previous year, which was down on the previous year, and so forth. The one before this, which had a higher rating, was running off the Nexus angle, which was a really hot angle heading into SummerSlam, whereas this one was based off what CM Punk quickly returning after taking a few days off, which
a title unification bout.
Huge boost to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Obviously SummerSlam's falling, but then again, generally speaking, pay-per-views are falling during this period as an overall thing, and that the numbers back me up. I'm not going to bore you with the details. If you want to go look, there's Wicca fuckingpedia. Okay, but pay-per-views were falling year on year, consistently. That Money in the Bank was such a huge anomaly for a C-level pay-per-view. You know, John Cena, well, yes, it does. We've already said, takes two to tango and so forth. John Cena's role in that really was just to stand around looking and being John Cena. CM Punk sold that pay-per-view, okay? It can be done. It was done. It happened. Listeners at home, they just glossed over that whole July 4th thing. They are trying to distract you from the truth. Okay, but you've got to make sure you pay attention to everything these guys say. They're a bit slimy, I hate to say.
Objection,
it.
Objection, Your Honour. I, in good faith, included the numbers of the two Raws that followed that July 4th to give a full context. And it still, I feel, makes my point relevant about... We talk about hype. CM Punk's the best in the world. He's coming back because he wants to get off his couch because he can't change the business sat on his couch at home in Chicago. There's no grand change here. They can talk about drops in numbers, but it returned to what it was. Okay, so if it returned to the norm, fantastic. That's brilliant. That's great. That's not game changing. That's not leading up to how great CM Punk thinks he is and how great he proclaims himself to be.
If I may interject, gentlemen, with a witness statement that I feel is quite relevant to this, and I would like the take of both sides. Paul Siebert on the FOW board says, the Summer of Punk really should have been one of WWE's hottest angles in history, but they botched it so badly that in hindsight it's baffling. In fact, let's look at how they followed up Punk's win at Money in the Bank. They had Vince McMahon announce a tournament for a new WWE champion, undercutting the whole champion leaving with a title story. They had Rey Mysterio win the tournament, only to drop the belt to John Cena in a surprise match the same night, thus making Cena out to be an untrustworthy champion and a bad friend to Rey to boot. They had Punk return after being off TV for less than 2 weeks, killing any suspense for his return. They had Punk defeat Cena in a top-for-top match at SummerSlam, only to have Del Rio win the belt via Money in the Bank. Why? Because the original plan was to put the world title on Alberto prior to Raw's first ever show in Mexico to build him up as a conquering hero, and plans never change, even if someone else gets hot all of a sudden. They had Alberto drop the belt to John Cena. Meanwhile, Punk is put in a match with Triple H, with Hunter's job as COO on the line. Punk ends up losing after a near immobile Kevin Nash interferes. They put the belt back on Alberto at the next month's Hell in a Cell, thus making our third straight pay-per-view where babyface Punk has either been screwed over or failed. Right around the time, they do their infamous angle where the entire Raw roster walks out on Triple H, making him effectively the only babyface not to look bad that week. The next week on Raw, among the only babyfaces to take up Triple H's cause are CM Punk. So much for the anti-authority figure gimmick. Punk fails in his fourth straight pay-per-view at Vengeance, teaming with Triple H against the duo of Miz and R-Truth, when the nearly immobile Kevin Nash makes what could not be accurately described as a run-in. Punk finally gets his belt back at Survivor Series, but not in the main event, playing second fiddle to Cena and Rock versus Miz and Truth. This 5-month stint is one of the most bungled handlings of a main event star since Rey Mysterio's world title run on SmackDown. Yet Punk remained over as hell and was rivaling John Cena in terms of moving merchandise. If anything, he overachieved with what he was given. So with that said, I would like to kind of throw that towards the prosecution. While you did illustrate numbers that move there, this was done in the context of promos, and I would like just for you to throw, for my benefit, how much you feel booking plays a part in this, because I don't feel it can solely be levied at the feet of Punk's promos. I'd like further clarification, please.
Well, I think it's quite a nice little segue into another point on the fraudulent comments that Punk likes to make. He likes to project himself as this, you know, the one who stood up to the bosses, and he's going along with all this shit. He's a hypocrite. He's a fraud. He took the money and he's doing whatever they want. Is that the truth? He's a fraud. He's led all these people on. He's leading the people on who got excited about his promos. He didn't have crossover appeal with his promos. He was never the star that he thought he was, that he projected himself as being. He appealed to his existing audience that was probably there for him when he came in from ROH. And it's just another example of him being a fraudulent shyster.
Just to elaborate on that, with the suggestion of booking here, CM Punk didn't have to come back so quickly. He didn't have to come back within 3 weeks. You may hear the defence say, well, this is booking. He was under contract. In many cases, that might be a reasonable assertion to make. Despite stating to Ariel Helwani that he took personal days, which he was allowed to take, surely it would have behooved him to take a personal day or two during this build and stay off TV longer. He likes to portray himself as opinionated, anti-establishment. Oh, wait, that's right. He got the tour bus, didn't he?
So, hold on, let me get this straight. This would be like turning around to Steve Austin and going, how dare you take a paycheck from Vince McMahon? You hate that guy! That's where this seems to be going, and I can't wrap my head around this.
Austin stood up for himself. If he didn't agree with something, he stood up and spoke out. Punk likes to project that.
Punk left the WWE while popular twice.
Then he's completely hypocritical, just going along with whatever's put in front of him. When he was, that was his strongest point. We all can agree on that. That was his most strongest position of bargaining power. And he just goes along with that admittedly shit booking and treatment. He didn't stand up for himself. He just said no.
They were paying him a lot of money.
Steve Austin was paid a lot of money. Did he have that feud with Jeff Jarrett? No. Did he have that feud with Billy Gunn? No.
Very different time period, though. I mean, at the end of the day, we can agree that Austin would have somewhere else to go.
So on the basis that it's a different time period, Your Honour, that surely the Steve Austin the way Steve Austin is inserted into this by the defence is then irrelevant.
Did he come back earlier than I think he wanted to? Probably. Did he come back earlier than we wanted him to? Hell yeah. But he wasn't a hypocrite for coming back to the job that... I mean, not only that, the job that is the only job like that in the world. There's nowhere else for him to go.
Though he did frankly state that he wanted to change the business, and then he just became another one of the guys. By having the tour bus. By having all the fringe benefits of being a top guy. That's not changing the business.
Well, what do you want for changing the business? Are we talking... I don't think there's any context there in starting a wrestling union kind of changing the business. By him being there, under the name CM Punk, entering under the name CM Punk and making a name for himself and going completely against the stereotype of the kind of guy Vince would usually push, I think that did pave a path, and we've already had listeners who've said similar things. It paved a path that, without CM Punk, would we have that? I don't see it. I really don't. I mean, they kicked off Daniel Bryan so hard. It's become very clear from the booking and very clear from the way they've done it that they do not want him at the top of the card despite how much they love him. CM Punk, on the other hand, I think that CM Punk, the freedom that guy had, Daniel Bryan's never had anything like that. Daniel Bryan, you know, every step of the way is scripted and booked. CM Punk, you know, he had his own promos, were crafted by Punk, because this is about interviews after all. Okay, and interviews aren't just numbers, it's about gathering that interest. Okay, and a lot of people
were... But the numbers are representative of the interest.
Those numbers only do so much, and the booking controls, as the judge himself said, the booking controls so much heading into there, that interviews... This isn't the 80s, interviews aren't a singular driving force, there are so many more levels to it.
I just want to make one comment on Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
One of the contributors said that they don't change... plans. They don't change plans when you don't move numbers. Bryan got a chance to headline WrestleMania, something that Punk never got, because he moved numbers.
I disagree. I think he got the chance there because the crowd would have shit all over it and ruined a WrestleMania, and Vince would never allow that.
So are the defense suggesting it's about putting the belt on smaller guys? Well, they put the belt on smaller guys before CM Punk. See Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Jeff Hardy before this 2011 Punk run.
Jeff Hardy's a very unique case, though, because he was with the company for a very long time beforehand. I mean, in the sense... I know, not in that role.
And unlike Punk, he moved numbers. 2009.
To a limited extent. If you think of Jeff Hardy, it's such a blip period with Jeff Hardy.
And more of a blip, less of a blip. More of a blip. More of a blip than Punk. As a draw for the year of 2009 compared to one summer when a guy was hot with the crowd that already liked him anyway, Jeff had crossover appeal to a wider audience. He drew in a wider fan base, whereas Punk, although wildly entertaining to his fans...
What's the wider fan base for Jeff Hardy?
Merchandise, TV numbers and pay-per-view increased. When Punk was hot, it was marginal at best.
Not true on merchandise, actually.
True, yes.
Merchandise did massively shift.
You are very true, yeah. I'll say that back because that was my segue to the point. Yeah. But yes, at that point, he outdrew Cena. Mm-hmm. For that period, for that summer... Yeah. Jeff Hardy did it for 2009 as a year. But Punk's impact was marginal.
I would say that if you are great on promos, a lot of the time one of the best indicators actually is merchandise, because no matter your booking, the merchandise, as long as it's out there, can go. You know, Daniel Bryan might be on the first match for WrestleMania, which makes you think, oh, you know, he's just opening WrestleMania, he can't be that popular. But if his shirts are selling like crazy, then he's still generating revenue in a different way. It's a way that the interviews or the work rate or what have you gets around that bad booking. And no one has moved merchandise like CM Punk did during that period since, have they? No one's topped Cena since. Daniel Bryan's come close, no one's topped it since. I mean, CM Punk merchandise was mental during that period. Interviews... During that period, I would be hard strained to find anyone better in that period than he was. I know he got the Wrestling Observer Award for the Interview of the Year that year, that kind of thing. I mean, but if we're talking interviews, we're talking that year. This is the absolute one where I would stand up and say, best in the world? Quite possibly.
Just to get to a couple of witness statements here. Adam Bomb 87 from the FOW board says, WWE never knew what they had in CM Punk. As Paul Heyman said in the CM Punk Best in the World documentary, they just signed a guy with some buzz. While many fans of ROH believed CM Punk was always destined for greatness, the office in WWE didn't share in that assessment, seemingly because they never bothered to see what skills earned Punk the buzz they signed him for. Despite being on the brink of release with no plans for him to ever be brought up before ECW relaunched in 2006, and then losing his biggest supporter in Paul Heyman just a few months after his debut, Punk wound up accomplishing the following. He was featured on WWE television from 2006 to 2014. ECW champion, IC champion, tag champion, two-time Money in the Bank winner, two-time World Heavyweight champion, two-time WWE champ, feuded with Orton, Jericho, Batista, Cena, Undertaker, Triple H, Rock, Brock Lesnar, and just about every top star that was around during his WWE run. Won the following Observer Newsletter awards: the best on interviews in 2011 and 2012, feud of the year in 2009 with Jeff Hardy and 2011 with John Cena, match of the year in 2011 for Money in the Bank with John Cena. During his top reign, he sold the second most merchandise in the world, behind only Cena, and surpassed Cena for a brief time period. Both financially and artistically, CM Punk's WWE run was a huge success. While he was never the draw at the level of a Hulk Hogan, or a worker at the level of a prime Shawn Michaels, Punk's WWE tenure has to be one of the top 10, or at least top 20, in the history of the company. Imagine what he could have accomplished if WWE brass actually knew what he was capable of from the beginning. We're talking wider context of hype going in. It's an extremely impressive WWE run, considering it was a guy that people mixed levels of anticipation.
On the basis of some of those things that the emailer said there, you know who else feuded with a lot of those names? JBL. Do we consider him great? Absolutely not.
He is going into the Hall of Fame, Carl.
And if you see that as any... if you see that for something more than the work that it is, I pity you. Wrestling Observer Awards? I'm a subscriber. I like the Observer. I read the newsletter, listen to the shows. As my learned colleague has pointed out before, crossover appeal, wider appeal. The Wrestling Observer crowd, if you will, generally tends to refer to what we've said before, Punk's fans already there for him.
Joe Ankovics from Facebook says, if we're going to talk about Punk being a fraud, let's look no further than his constant insistence that he's always been some kind of persecuted, underappreciated whipping boy. There are some people in the world who just have to be put in the role of underappreciated victim in order to thrive. Punk's mentor is the master of this, Paul Lee, the man who ran ECW screaming at audiences about how the WWF wanted ECW out of business while partially funding the endeavour with checks signed by Vince McMahon. Punk's claims to be the best in the world are undercut by his good but not great ring work, his piss-poor attitude, an inability to truly get over across the board. If he's not doing a tired old indie-style phony shoot, he doesn't get top-level reactions from the crowd, and I've wondered for a long time if the WWE pipe bomb promo would have gone over half as well if he wasn't bouncing it off the Cena sucks wall. Also, I don't understand why people adore his commentary so much when all he's doing is channeling Kevin Nash from late WCW. That being said, I am totally going to watch his MMA debut because I will not risk missing him seeing... I will not risk missing seeing him get his smug little face broken. Which is the equivalent, I believe, of Nails in the Vince trial saying he hates him at the end. Which really just kind of pissed all over his own argument. But a couple of different points there that I'd like the defence to touch on.
I mean, this is a guy who continued working through constant injuries. And I know that's something that a lot of wrestlers do. But I mean, you know, he lists his numerous injuries, like, you know, two knee injuries, elbow injury, freaking strange lump on his back, whatever. And even after multiple surgeries, like the day he's leaving, you know, the hospital of the surgery, he's getting a call off Vince, who's turning around and saying like, oh, we booked you on this show. And he's kind of like, he doesn't want to do it because he wants to rehab, but he still does it in the end. He still does it so many times, but Vince turns around and says, well, I'll owe you one, kid. And, you know, and he says he did this to him three times. Same as every old wrestler. I'm not gonna like put here again, self-crucify him, that like, he's the only one that's done this. We can certainly name a lot of wrestlers that worked through hard times. But to turn around and state that someone like him has a piss-poor attitude when he's worked through numerous injuries, reworked with someone, because we mentioned Ryback again, reworked with someone who had injured him before, even though he was against it, but Vince was like, no, I need you to work with him again. He still did it. He may object, but he still went along with it because he still wanted to do what was best for the business. So
just on the some of the points G raised there, Your Honour, in many respects, with regards to the... infection on his back, which he claims is life-threatening, it is worth pointing out that Mr. Phil Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, is currently the subject of an outstanding lawsuit from Dr. Chris Amann regarding the quote-unquote infection.
And just a quick one. The listening of injuries he cites, although initially I think in the interview with Cabana that he attributes. He starts off by talking about Ryback, the kick to the ribs, and then re-injure him. And he's wondering, you know, is it like a conspiracy against him?
Yeah.
But then he goes on to list injuries he picked up with a whole host of other guys.
Yeah.
The guy's brittle. He's not an athlete. He's not athletic enough to be the best in the world. He's brittle.
Moving on here to another witness statement from Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW, says, I would say as an athlete, Punk is drastically overrated, but he worked hard for a guy born with very little athletic prowess. I find it annoying how he wanted to be this MMA guy as his gimmick because he looked like a giant wuss pretty boy, and I believe my personal life hero, Carl Jones, has brought up that he has the gait of a preteen girl. Well, actually, that was Kieran's line.
Doesn't matter, I'll take it.
I may have added...
Look at this shit. Fucking, you got, was it? Yeah. Edward's got the fucking...
The logic bomb.
Logic bomb, yeah, as well. Trademark this.
Nobody's
shit.
Nobody's listening to you, man.
No.
If not for all of the tattoos, he would have looked like Joe Average. In saying that, the guy was a great talent. He made whatever it was about him work. His matches, at worst, were watchable. At best, they were great. He was great on the mic, and you could tell he put his heart and soul into everything. It's probably why he's such a little prick. His technical acumen was a little overrated, but the guy has a gas tank, and I would not go so far as to call him sloppy. What absolves him of any guilt was what happened during the Summer of Punk. His momentum was incredible, and what did they do? They linked him to Triple H and the Nash bullshit, and never gave him his shine. Sorry, but there's not much coming back from that, though thankfully he managed to salvage some of it, but Mr. Desperate for Attention Hunter should have realised his prime was long gone and it's time to take a chance on someone else. Not guilty, although this trial process is necessary. Kowalski's gonna kill Santa. Oh no! From WrestlingForum.com says, I stopped watching WWE for years and only decided to watch again to see Lawler return from his heart attack. I continued to watch after that because of CM Punk. He was different, exciting and captivating. Punk was not just a rehash of a formula that was successful in the past. He was uniquely himself in his presentation, delivery, and ring style. He had been hyped as fiercely independent and unique, and proved that throughout his career with WWE up till and including his exit from the company. Many top indie stars have to conform and mold themselves for the benefit of WWE and their presentation of sports entertainment. Punk never did that. If anything, WWE had to alter their presentation to fall in line with the Punk phenomenon. Punk was hyped as an independent superstar, and for every moment he was with WWE, including his abrupt exit, Punk was an extremely independent superstar. Again, going back to that initial hype leading into his debut and his run.
Well, there you go. Exhibition 1, a person who did not know Punk beforehand, being brought into wrestling via CM Punk, a wider audience. So that's an actual example that we have.
Street Dream 83 from F4W says, the infamous promo was what brought me back to watching WWE again after not watching for over 10 years. When Punk left, I stopped watching weekly. When I go back and watch the stuff he did with the Straight Edge Society or his feud with Jeff Hardy or the Summer of Punk, I am reminded just how great the guy was in the ring and on the mic. Childs from Pro Wrestling Only says, Punk's career was a massive success relative to his tools and background. He overcame all sorts of deep WWE biases relating to look, indie origins, etc. to become one of the top few guys in the company, and he paved the way for others from the indie boom to take over much of the roster. Was he a star on the level of Austin, Rock, or Cena? No, but for a physically awkward dude who got off on playing Iconoclast, he did a hell of a lot in Vince Land. I can't imagine any sane person thinking in 2005 that he'd do better than he ended up doing. No comments on that one. Move along to Gay as Fook from the UK fan forum, who says, he's seemingly a self-made anomaly in the world of pro wrestling, a prickly thorn in the side nightmare to corporate WWE in real life, eventually siphoned into one of the most successful character runs in modern history, and then full circle into another real series of clashes with boardroom wrestling that saw an abrupt end to his wrestling career for now. There's a lot of thematic comparisons to be made between Punk and Bret Hart, I feel, tying into what you said earlier on, Luke. The straight-talking, competitive, no-nonsense character hemorrhaging into the straight-talking, competitive, no-nonsense human being, spawning a confusing, divisive monster of contradictions. Opening the floor to in-depth analysis of the performers' personal lives, what we all should really be concerned about is the fact that they were both bloody good at what they've done. I suppose that brings to light, above all else, what an interesting thing CM Punk has been for the wrestling business, especially in a WWE now derided for lacking any real depth in personality. Punk threw all that out there for us because he was one of the few people during its time to go and try and spit roast Vince McMahon in his own office. For whatever he may and may not have done for the commercial end of the business, Mr. 2.9 as champion. But then those t-shirts were everywhere. He's definitely done some good work on that ship. He ended up becoming one of the more interesting performers in recent memory thanks to that mishmash of reality and fantasy that all the best shit in wrestling seems to bubble up from. I haven't even mentioned a single match, promo, or angle, and there have been plenty. So get that man off the hook. I call for a mistrial.
Well, that's clearly not happening.
Back to the prosecution for their third and final point that they would like to make, this time pertaining to, I believe, his business acumen, if not mistaken.
Loosely entitled Business Acumen / Intelligence / Originality. Start with originality. He stole the Best in the World name from Daniel Bryan. He stole the wrist roll from Wanderlei Silva. He stole the elbow from Randy Savage. He stole his finisher from Kenta. So he's not very original. And his character, as the anti-authority thing, is channeled from Steve Austin, I would argue. In terms of intelligence, I mean, as he said in the interview, he's repeated his line to Vince was, if I'm not a star on the level of Brock or Rock, then fire me, because that's what I'm here to do. That's why I believe I am. This is the crux of this whole case. He claims WrestleMania, obviously because he's through his own ego and desire to main event WrestleMania, when Rock's put in the spot, oh, heaven forbid, it's not the Rock who draws at WrestleMania, it's the WrestleMania name. Well, there's no debate that the WrestleMania name is a baseline drawing card. Are you telling me The Rock is not a draw, Punk? You're telling me you're on the level of The Rock, Punk?
He's not listening.
He is, because he's an egomaniac, and he's listened to everything that's got his name attached to it.
On that point, if I may just interject, because you mentioned about drawing there again, and I'm a big numbers guy. I love me some numbers. Let's look at that WrestleMania 27 where he claimed that The Rock was really taking credit for something he had no right to. It was a 1.1 million buys. The significance of that? The previous 2 years did not reach the 1 million buy mark. And it's worth just emphasising the point that WrestleMania 27, as its marquee match, was John Cena against The Miz. I think it's fair to say that without The Rock, WrestleMania 27 does not get past 1 million buys.
CM Punk, you are not as big a star as The Rock. It's okay. It's okay, dude. No one is. He gets pissy that Vince McMahon won't let him have his own external sponsorship on his shorts. Then he gets pissy when Brock Lesnar is allowed to. You're not as big a star as Brock fucking Lesnar. This is the framework for this case. This is the expectation he had on himself. This is what he projected as, through his opinion of his own abilities. And it is a goal which was never, ever obtained.
The whole idea about being original, what the hell has that got to do with being the best in the world? Ric Flair. The original Nature Boy Ric Flair, you've heard of him, yeah? The Hulk Hogan. I mean, the originality is not... Yeah, that's... No one's claiming those guys were original. Where's the originality coming from? I can't find any quote that he's claimed
that. I think
that.
It's relevant, seeing as though a number of the contributors have listed that as a draw to him.
I don't feel that's part of his hype. Never did you hear his hype on coming in of, oh, he's going to innovate loads of... He's not Nova, for God's sake.
and we can all be thankful for that.
It's doing something well that's kind of important, I suppose. So basically, CM Punk saying to Vince, you know, I did all these things, I did what you wanted. I wanted the main event of WrestleMania. And it's fine if you don't think that is me, and I'm not that caliber of superstar, then fire me. And I think there's a good argument to be made that he was pissed off that the main event of Mania that year featured The Rock and John Cena and... Who was the third guy? The fucking Miz. Now, he was in a feud at that time with Randy Orton banning the Nexus from being around, which was garbage. and he didn't want to be in that feud, but that's where he was. I think a lot of it is stemming from that Mania, where... You could put Punk in that main event. You could remove The Miz. It's just the fact that Punk was in this Randy Orton thing they decided to book him in.
No, I've got to disagree, sorry. He specifically is pissy. Yeah. He did not want to drop the belt to Rock. He thought Rock and Cena was going to be shit. He wanted to be in the match. He wanted to be in the main event. He suggested either he loses the belt to Rock and then he's in the match himself, or that he keeps the belt and puts it on the line against Undertaker. He is specifically pissed off.
I've got that.
He doesn't want to drop the belt to Rock.
No, I just want to bring it to one of the witness statements here, which alludes to the same thing. Wyatt Sheep Mask on the UK fan forum says, Punk, in my opinion, only reached the upper echelons once he got paired up with another worker of similar ability. Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio were great at working the crowds for reactions, while Punk could control the ebb and flow of the matches, and the feud with Cena was great to the fall around. Then came the time where everything had to be a shoot, and real names and fucking ice cream bars started getting bandied about, and it all became a bit cringy. The podcast with Colt Cabana gave him the chance to tell his side of things. Yet for somebody who claimed to not be driven by money, as he outlined at the start of the podcast, by God did he ever bang on about it at every opportunity. He also did a great job of playing the victim through the whole thing, which just made him come across like a petulant child who didn't get his expensive toys that he wanted for Christmas. The way he moaned, you'd think he was an honorary Brit. He loves whinging about The Miz in the main event of WrestleMania 27, yet what can he honestly say he had done to warrant that spot? That being the spot in the top match on the biggest show of the year for the entire industry. He had a top end feud with Rey Mysterio the previous year, and yes, the straight edge society stuff was good, but can he honestly say he was one of the top two in the company at that time? That's not to say that Miz was. That was made clear as it was all about Cena and Rock. Had Punk been given that main event spot, he would have been exactly the same as what The Miz was in that match, nothing more than an afterthought. I'm not saying I don't like his work, I honestly do. However, there is a fine line between having self-confidence and being an arrogant sob with delusions of grandeur.
Even if we go back to the sort of the point the defence were making there about that, even if it were, for argument's sake, that WrestleMania Punk was prissy about, he has no right to be, and the numbers bear that out. Surely this company is vindicated by the fact that that show, with The Rock's involvement, got 1.1 million buys, better than the previous 2 years.
Dylan Waco on Pro Wrestling Only says, there's a lot of criticise about Punk. He could be dreadfully boring and lazy when he was upset with his on-screen direction. Despite getting a very long title reign, he came out of that run looking weaker than he did when he went in. He's one of the most egregious visible spot callers in wrestling history, and he was less than precise, and I'm being generous, in the ring. However, in many respects, Punk was a wrestling genius, and he certainly got it better than most of the allegedly big-time stars who have emerged post-Monday Night War era. This is especially evident when you look at what Punk was able to do with secondary feuds and angles that weren't necessarily designed to be big drawing cards. Things like the Straight Edge Society feud with Ray, or the slow heel turn, feud and eventual loser leaves town angle with Jeff Hardy are among the best and most interesting things WWE has done in the last decade. On this point, I'd argue that Punk was basically this generation's Jake Roberts in the sense that he could make secondary feuds feel like the most important things on a show because he was the best the company had at getting over an angle.
And that really helps draw me back to what I was trying to say. Kieran, could you do me a favour? Could you, my esteemed colleague, what was the title of this section? What would you, do you have it written down? Or you just
business acumen, intelligence, and originality.
Thank you. Okay, we've already thrown originality out.
His style is completely fucking embarrassing to be equating yourself to fucking Wanderlei Silva.
I don't necessarily think he was. I mean, Daniel Bryan's yes thing caught on amazingly, and that was taken from Diego Sanchez. It doesn't matter. That's not an original creation of him. He just got it over in pretty much the same... I was about to say in a different way. Not really, in the same way.
He came in as this hybrid MMA-style pro wrestler, and the point we were making in that section was that given his sloppiness, his strikes, it was embarrassing.
You see, because I didn't have that background, because I'm not in the... I don't want to say in the bubble because it sounds like a prick, but you know the point I'm making is that to me, coming into it, seeing CM Punk, I'd seen him in ROH, I didn't know what that meant. It was just a thing he did. Hell, when he's not the thing from the Fantastic Four, but he yells it's clobbering time when he comes down the ramp. I mean, it doesn't, that doesn't mean anything to people who don't know.
Yeah, more plagiarism, Your Honour.
And I don't think plagiarism's a problem. Suffice to say, the other two points were intelligence and business acumen. The person who just spoke then did speak to his business acumen and intelligence to some point there, saying how he was able to get over those secondary feuds, a big thing. And that's something you have to do in wrestling to an extent if the company isn't 100% behind you. If you're not Roman Reigns, if you're not Cena, if they're not super behind you, you've got to have a level of intelligence and business acumen to get yourself anywhere within the WWE. And he has done so. And he did so, and now, even that he's outside the WB, that's still happening in that he is still somewhat of a name. That demonstrates that he succeeded. So I believe that if we... I think originality is completely irrelevant. I believe that he got those moves over, so it's fine. I mean, you know, if he had stolen the go to sleep and nobody gave a shit about the go to sleep when he did it, then that's an absolutely fair argument, I suppose. But he got the GTS over. He got all the little things he does over. I didn't know where a lot of these things had come from, but he got them over, which is good. That's a good thing. I don't understand why this is a problem. So, business acumen, intelligence. The guy got himself over. We talked about that with the ECW thing previously. You look at all the other guys who came up 3CW. I think it's absolutely fair to say that nobody got as over as Punk did.
No.
I mean, you know...
Just how low are we setting the bar here?
But that's the point I'm... But the point I'm making is nobody else came through beyond a pity intercontinental level, I suppose I'd call it. Okay? I mean, and he did, which demonstrate... And he did with no support, as far as anyone can demonstrate. Heyman had gone. That earlier part, that living up to the hype of him coming in. And in that period of him coming in, he broke through the glass ceiling of getting out of ECW, getting onto the main roster, doing well, getting... He got Money in the Bank at one point, didn't he? I mean, he got on and he did well. Now, the I'm Best in the World part starts much, much later. So the expectation of the internet, as I've already characterised it as... hope but not expectation, given the WWE. He surpassed that during that period, and then it wasn't until later that his own hype kicked in. It wasn't until much later that he actually proclaimed his own hype, mainly because he wasn't getting mic time. He certainly wasn't booked well, but he was still getting over, and his merchandise had already started selling by that point.
Chucks4W on the F4W board says you don't go from 0 to 60 overnight, it takes time. Punk's numbers were trending upward from the pipe bomb promo to the time he left. They were better in 2011 than 2010, and they were better in 2012 than 2011. You can argue that he wasn't hitting Cena levels, but Cena had a good 6 or 7 years on him as a top guy. Saying his numbers weren't good enough is the same argument WWE was making against Daniel Bryan. They won't push somebody like Cena until they beat Cena's numbers, and they won't allow anyone to hit Cena's numbers until they push him like Cena. And if Punk didn't help house show attendance, then why was he headlining a tour opposite John Cena's tour? couple of points there. Lockjaw on TPWW says, I think he made it as far as anybody had done in over a decade. And that is quite the accomplishment. When he first started out, he was indeed nothing special. It was just like, oh, so this is the guy the internet goes crazy about? When he won his first world title, it was like, really, this guy? Then he won his second world title and turned heel and started developing into an actual character. He began to win me over both in the ring and outside the ring. And then, of course, he really took off in the whole Summer of Punk. Sure, the start and the finish are a bit bumpy, but on the whole, it established CM Punk as on another level. Even after we lost the title, CM Punk still felt special. Indeed, they made sure they always had a plan or story for CM Punk to be involved in, and it always felt like a main attraction because CM Punk was there. I still feel like CM Punk's exit has left a void that's yet to be filled. There is no one currently around who they present as special as they did CM Punk.
I think someone that's been kind of like left out in terms of like Punk's career is just how much shit he had to deal with whilst on, you know, rising up to the top, okay, and what sort of pitfalls he ended up having. You know, we've talked about briefly about the hype from Ring of Honor fans, no hype at all from the casual fan because they didn't know who he was at all. So it's like CM Punk had to build that with an audience. He had a core demographic that he could work with, but the rest he had to build all by himself. He was in an ECW branded show that was mostly weak. But when you kind of look at CM Punk and how he kind of like moved through the landscape, there's always an upwards movement with him. Whether he kind of like started off in ECW, then eventually kind of moved to Raw or SmackDown. He wins one Money in the Bank. He gets knocked down again. He wins another Money in the Bank. He turns. He creates something interesting with the Straight Edge Society. You know, feuds with Jeff Hardy, Rey Mysterio. There's a slow, steady climb. He's slowly kind of building the fan base. What were the comments before that people were briefly mentioning when they were talking about like his moveset and so on, and saying that how he rips people off? A lot of stuff that they kind of mentioned CM Punk hadn't done in Ring of Honor, but suddenly started doing when he's in WWE. I think that's probably more a sign of his intelligence, as he's realizing that what he did in Ring of Honor works there, but not in WWE. So he had to adapt his style. He took little things here and there, little nuggets. The Go to Sleep, as far as I'm aware, outside the people that watch Japan, I don't know how many people actually knew what the Go to Sleep was. I'm going to go out there and presume that a lot of the casual fans thought that was something CM Punk created. He did a lot of these kind of like little references here and there. Like, you know, you mentioned it's a clobbering time with a thing. Also remember on a couple of occasions he was wearing a Jack Burton shirt from Big Trouble in Little China. Little things that are maybe there to entertain himself. But if you were a fan and you caught it was maybe just a little thing for maybe him to just link onto you in a way. Like something like that. It's just like, he was always trying to work, you know, the casual fan and also trying to find something different. So you create this this image that he just stole a lot of things. I just think he was trying to expand upon what he already had to try and get as many fans as possible to try and create a larger fan base. Because the only fan base he had to begin with was the people who'd seen him in Ring of Honor.
This expansion of his fan base, where is that substantiated? We've already proven the numbers. He didn't move numbers. And so where's his fan base?
I mean, and on this basis that, you know, doesn't your arsehole just bleed for the trials and tribulations that CM Punk endured? I mean, my God, it brought a tear to my eye socket. G alluded to it there. CM Punk advanced, moved through the landscape. We are not disputing that he advanced beyond the early stages of his ECW run. No one has disputed that in this courtroom. But we have to look at the fact of the hype, using his own words, best in the world, changing the business. Look at the post-punk landscape now. Does it look as if CM Punk was ever there, really? I really don't think that the company itself has really changed that much.
I would say that NXT has changed the company completely.
NXT is effectively its own entity.
I think he opened doors in terms of helping getting more of the you know, what you'd call a classic indie talent getting involved. Because when I said like he was like the first one, you know, like the Daniel Bryans, and even some that, you know, didn't succeed but actually did get opportunities, you know, like the Lowkeys or whatever. Like it was kind of like at first like a slow drip and tap, but that's kind of got a lot better since. But it was something that started with CM Punk in terms of like the name from the indie, because up until then, they were doing all their, you know, by bodybuilders or whatever, or footballers and so on, which they still do now. But by having CM Punk around, it's kind of opened the doors to like getting the other indie guys, the kind of veterans, if you want, from the indies, and bringing them in. Because I think like without like Punk coming in and being a success to the degree that he managed to get, I don't think they would have hired people like Daniel Bryan, or like later on down the line the Tyler Blacks or the Kevin Steens or the El Genericos and so on. I think, like, at least from that perspective, CM Punk opened doors for, you know, Ring of Honor wrestlers or whatever.
To attribute that to Punk is, I think, it's ridiculous. The reason they started going to the indies is because they had no source of talent. That's irrespective, but that's why they brought Punk in the first place. He wasn't breaking down doors. It's because there was so little talent. We're looking at this, the NXT thing. This is the point you're getting to now. You're talking about NXT, and that was absolutely on the back of the Bryan explosion, where they were forced to change because that segment of the audience needed to be catered for, and they're catering to it. To put that on Punk is just incidental.
Let's face it, before Bryan's introduction, it was still just Florida Championship Wrestling, effectively. It's like, they've got to get talent from somewhere.
Okay, well, let's take it back, and, you know, it was because it goes back to when they signed Freddie Joe Floyd from Smoky Mountain or something, because that was out of the box. It's ridiculous. It's incidental. Guys have always been signed from different places, from the indies, from other companies, from bringing in fresh talent.
So CM Punk wasn't the only person around. There was AJ Styles, there was Samoa Joe's, there was Daniel Bryan's and so on. There was a lot of other people, and they didn't just mass the talent all there. All of them were good. They didn't just go, like, we need as much talent, so they grabbed whole Ring of Honor. They only grabbed one guy, because they didn't usually dip into the indie circuit. And they went with him. He was able to, like, build himself up for the company to the point where they turned around and said, okay, well, that worked then. It wasn't like just this mass thing of, like, oh, whoa, hold on a sec, we haven't tapped into this talent before. Because if they did, they would have hired more people than just CM Punk. But they didn't. They went and got one guy.
They did try and sign AJ Styles. I know this because I spoke to him in person about it, and he told me so. But the money wasn't there.
We don't have that on the record.
Is there records of that conversation?
As a witness to this conversation, I can confirm that he is telling the truth.
Good.
Anyway, continue.
Someone like John Cena, who's been the biggest star in the company for the last decade, they didn't just get him because he had a good physique. Did that play a part? Absolutely. But he was wrestling on the indies before he was signed to OVW.
A part is underplaying it.
Did AJ say why he didn't sign with him in the end?
It was the money. It was the guaranteed money.
It wasn't enough money.
He could guarantee more money working in indies.
So obviously the offer for AJ Styles wasn't serious enough for him to actually even remotely consider it. He just decided, I'm going to stay on the indie circuit.
A point I just want to, on Kieran there, you talked about, you think it was more Daniel Bryan setting up the whole NXT thing. Yeah. No, I don't disagree, because I actually think there's a good debate there. But with that, I personally put it to you that I don't think they'd have gone as far as they did with Bryan if Punk hadn't got as far as he did. But I think that there is a very good point to make that CM Punk started the Daniel Bryan getting over to the level he did, because he wasn't. I mean, just not his fault. That's purely bad booking, as we know when he came in.
Yeah, I think we're going to go around in
circles. I know that's the problem.
I just would say, just to reiterate my feelings on it, equating Punk to the current recruitment drive is incidental.
That's fair.
And I think a bigger factor, to just clarify, factor was the niche success of Bryan, which then exploded in its own right. Yeah. I think that's more directly responsible for the current inclination.
Okay. Punk changing things more in the sense of he was really the first one to break through as a guy who was an indie guy and that kind of thing, and in the modern era, and has allowed them to have a level of faith in actually just going with it. And Punk demonstrated that we can use them for this. The amount of t-shirts Daniel Bryan got, who ever thought that Bryan Danielson was going to get t-shirts?
But to what you just said there about the company going with it, I think this ties back to this suggestion that Punk changed the landscape. You even said yourself there, their natural inclination is not to go with it, and for a large part they don't. We're talking about 2011 for the start of this quote unquote landslide. And what do we have these days? Who's the guy they want to push? Roman Reigns. Who else is the guy they put the belt on this year? Sheamus. Who's the champion now? Triple H. Who's the company focused around these days? Triple H. Well, my God, look at that change in landscape. It may as well be 2002.
Well, we know that without a competitor, and we've said this on the podcast before, without a competitor, the WWE, specifically Vince, is glacial in their pace of change. The business has shifted. The way we're going now indie wrestlers, ex-indie wrestlers coming in rather than the bodybuilder types, rather than the football player types, or as well as, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you look at the roster today.
Those are the guys they want to push.
He was one of the few during that period, as you said on his DVD, that he believed that he could go there and make it when AJ Styles turned it down to play safe because AJ Styles thought they were going to bury him. Now, what CM Punk has proven is if you go there with the right mentality, you really can make it in the WWE. And he has demonstrated that, he has proved that, and that change of mentality, not in WWE, but in the business as a whole, has changed it. That's what I say.
Cool, actual witness statements here. Matt Applin on the Facebook page says, "Oh, CM Punk, we hardly knew ye. I will admit, I was one of the many that were seduced by Punk. I put it down to him coming into WWE at a time when people were screaming for someone new. Cena, Orton, Batista, and Triple H had all been shoved down people's throats. Along came Punk. What was promised was greatness, what we got was mediocrity, dressed up as the second coming of Steve Austin. So for that I say, put him in the cell with Triple H and let Ahmed have at it again. Guilty!" Benno on the UK fan forum says, "I always thought he'd be massive if WWE took him on and got past the size issue. He was a weird one because in ROH he was never a work rate and pure sports build worker type of person. There was a decent portion of the ROH fan base who hated him and saw him as sloppy. He positioned himself as more of a pro slash sports entertainment kind of guy in ROH and was all character and story. When he got to WWE though, he was this weird podgy guy with shit straggly black hair cutting generic promos about jiu-jitsu and faux MMA. People moan about scripted promos all the time, but I don't think there's a better example of all the personality being sucked out of someone like that ECW run. His interview just didn't have the confidence or right cadence until into his Straight Edge Society stuff. That gets overplayed as this great thing, but as good as the individual segments were, it never quite got going to the level it should have. Mainly again due to him being a prick and getting his push derailed every time he got going. The truly great stuff with his breakthrough in the Summer of Punk, that and the Heyman heel run were incredible. He hoodwinked a lot of people that he was some great best in the world technical wrestler, but he never really had the athletic ability or execution people you talk of like that tend to have. Really, he was just a great talker and storyteller who managed to have some incredible matches. He's one of my favourites ever, but I understand people not seeing him in the same light. His uninspired Wolverine run at the end and premature retirement does hurt his legacy. He was probably one big run away from being one of the true greats. That, plus yeah, he really is a dickhead." Strummer from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I've had this conversation several times in the past couple of years. Without a doubt, he had a great career in WWE, but he's more a top guy in the ilk of a Jericho or an Edge, and less like guys like Austin, Rock, and Triple H. The problem was he saw himself in the latter group, and he clearly viewed his run as a disappointment because he didn't reach that level. I think he was on his way to becoming the company's primary mechanic, and he wanted no part of that. He wanted to be a made guy that would headline manias, and it just didn't happen." King Pitcos on the UK fan forum says, "He was bloody good, not counting the last year of his career when he was shit. He was given a lot more freedom than most, but only because he took it and ran with it. While John Morrison and Kofi Kingston were getting their scripts and nodding, Punk was saying, 'This is shit, I'll do it my own way.' Some great character stuff in the Straight Edge gimmick. His more famous 'I'm a forum guy, hey Colt Cabana, Nash's work rate sucks' promos were pretty rubbish, but interesting at first. And he had some tremendous matches. He's a genuine contender to Edge as John Cena's greatest ever rival. He's not as good as he thought he was, but nobody ever has been as good as they thought they were. You'd have to be as wrong as a paedophile to think he should have been in the WrestleMania main event any year he was there instead of what they did put on. But without that level of egomania, he wouldn't have been as driven. And the sad part is he probably would have headlined it by now if he'd stuck around. He was never a number one guy, but he was a better number two than Randy Orton." Maluko on TPWW says, "There was a stage where CM Punk was literally neck and neck with John Cena at the very top of the card, often getting the better of him in big matches. Only an extremely optimistic person could have called that going in. I actually don't think this is even a debate. He was an unqualified success. I just don't think he understood that your out-of-the-ring personality can dictate who the best superstar to represent the company is. He had a chip on his shoulder about being number one, but his moody, irritable persona meant Cena was always going to be the man. I also think that Daniel Bryan's rise coincided with his exit. I don't think he liked the idea of not being the number one in-ring performer in the company, but neither did Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart." Laz from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I didn't care for Punk's work on the indies. I find his series with Joe to be among the most overrated matches ROH has ever done. I didn't care for much of his IWA Mid-South work beyond when he had a live mic, and feel like his pushes were never warranted by his ability. That said, his WWE work is among the best of anyone during his run. He has two matches that I have no problem giving the full 5-star treatment to: Money in the Bank with Cena and SummerSlam with Brock. His series with Morrison on ECW, his feuds with Chris Jericho and Jeff Hardy were entertaining, though not earth-shattering. He had a great match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania that overcame poor booking and its foregone conclusion, doing it without gimmicks to disguise the in-ring shortcomings, unlike Triple H. Like others have said, the booking was obviously not in his favour for the majority of his run, and that he was able to get insanely over in spite of it is a testament to his ability. Was he on the level of Austin, Flair, Hogan, Rock and Cena? No. But was he given the booking and protection of any of them? Hell no. Nick Davis on the Facebook page says, when there was a character slash personality that provoked so much discussion and interest in their performance, from quality in the ring and on the mic, directly or indirectly, his influence on the product is still felt today. The influx of indie talent, the rise of NXT can all be traced back to the pipe bomb. How much was his idea or a combination effort can be put up for debate. But it must be said that promo encapsulated the frustrations of so many internet fans and was the first genuinely interesting thing to happen on television in many years. In closing, his departure from the WWE was the biggest news story of the year, regardless of whether he was right or wrong to take his ball and walk. At least he had the balls, with so many other people happy to be creatively unfulfilled and fill their pockets, he turned his back on all that. Sum up on the other side here, Michael3165 from the UK fan forum says, Punk is one of those guys who rated himself way higher than he had any right to. He did exceptionally well for himself given his average physique and unkempt appearance. He came around at the time when they had an audience sick of John Cena, Orton on top, Taker winding down, Edge retiring, and Hardy getting himself let go. The audience were dying for something new, and the pipe bomb promo certainly cemented him as that. With that in mind, he's a huge crybaby, almost on the scale of Bret Hart. Moaning about not main eventing WrestleMania despite having worked alongside Jericho one year and Undertaker the next, it's hardly a bad spot when you're in one of the feature matches of WrestleMania, and he got a spot opposite Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam too. I understood his frustration, but WWE needed to sell WrestleMania, and Punk versus anyone just won't do for the main event. I felt the same way about The Miz at WrestleMania 27, and stand by that too. They need big names to draw the money, because that is what WrestleMania is about, and he didn't fit the bill. He was a sturdy worker with some fantastic matches under his belt. He rated himself higher than he should and believed that the WWE needed or owed him something, both of which were untrue at the time. GBH189 on the UK fan forum will wrap it up here and says, Punk got as high as he was allowed to within the WWE structure. In the aftermath of the pipe bomb, he was poised to become the guy in WWE, popular and becoming desired by outside media. However, instead of writing this fresh character and storyline to its logical conclusion, Punk was fed to Kevin Nash and Triple H in one of the stupidest moves in recent memory. True, he was a multiple time champion that always seemed to play spare tire instead of cementing him as the top guy. To my mind, he is not guilty, but WWE certainly is. And with that said, gentlemen, I'd like to refer you now to your closing statements, your final bits of information regarding CM Punk on the charge. And I'd like to reiterate the charge, because we veered off track on points here during the course of the trial, and it has been noted when that's been done. The charge: fraud and misrepresentation, in that he and his WWE career didn't live up to all the hype from the internet and his own self-promotion surrounding him going in and throughout.
Looking at what Mr. Punk is on trial for here today, whilst it's nice that some fans believe he overachieved, did better than they ever thought he would, and as the defence has suggested, navigated the landscape and did very well, it's all very nice, but you have to judge the man by his own words, Your Honour. He declared himself the best in the world, and when you do that, it brings with it a certain level of hype. A certain level of hype that CM Punk could not live up to, and the defence cannot justify. Even when they try to suggest some paving the way, changing the landscape, they have tenuous at best links to the current roster, which can't be substantiated. When they try to suggest that he was a boon to the business through merchandise sales, they have to acknowledge that he didn't move TV numbers, that his pay-per-view numbers were inconsistent. That in itself, they can't fully support. This is a man who, like I said in our opening statement, like many other cult leaders before him, hoodwinked, bamboozled, misled people. And unfortunately, like those other cult leaders, he ultimately disappointed.
I think it's important to recognise that this isn't a relative success we're judging here. This is a composite of his career, which has been defined by himself as believing he truly was a tippy-top star and the best in the world. But I think he said it best himself at the end of the Colt Cabana interview: I failed as a wrestler.
I believe we have done a more than satisfactory job of demonstrating the clear case that CM Punk is completely innocent of these charges. We have broken it down repeatedly that there are two clear eras being discussed by the charge as he enters, and then of course as he continues through, which we've brought it down to his entry in and then the best in the world period. we've not heard anyone say at all from our witnesses, and no one here around here has said that he didn't achieve more than was anticipated of him on his entrance. It certainly would appear that he surpassed the expectations of any given internet fan, because apparently we're not talking about the general public, we're talking about the internet, according to the judge. So he surpassed the internet fans. He believes that he had the potential for being right there up at the top, blah, 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 blah. And if we take Best in the World at face value, which I still dispute that we should not be taking these things 100% literally, then as far as work rate goes, we have stated repeatedly that he had had many, many great matches. Even the best wrestlers have some that aren't so great. Even the best wrestlers have weaknesses. As far as interviews go, I think there is an easy argument to be made that he was the best in the world when given the mic and given the platform in that period. Business sense, intelligence, and originality. Now, I disregard originality for previously given reasons. Business sense and intelligence, he got himself, using his intelligence and using his business sense, most of the way to the position he was in. No one else was really defending him. He found ways of getting where he wanted to be, and he got there. In all three of the prosecution's things, I believe that they failed to demonstrate that he was lacking in any of those departments, personally. That's what I got from that, but it will be for the judge to decide. On the minor points that they also brought up about changing the landscape, I've already made my point that I believe he has changed the landscape of the business as a whole, not the WWE. We're not talking about Vince personally. I'm talking about that idea that indie wrestlers can get to the WWE and actually do something. And I believe that that wasn't a mentality beforehand. And so I believe every point that they have made, we have covered.
I'll be honest, I've just remained absolutely bamboozled through this entire thing, and enjoyed. I was entertained by the prosecution and their renditions of these beautiful fables and tales by both of them, and it's just left me absolutely stunned.
I'd like to take a short recess to determine my verdict, and we will return with the guilties or not guilties with regards to CM Punk. After returning from the judges' chambers, having filed through pages of notes and attempted bribes from both sides, I feel I have come to a decision, although it has been a very difficult one, and I'll explain why. There were three main topics brought to the table by the prosecution for this charge, the charge again being, just to clarify, fraud and misrepresentation in that he, CM Punk, and his WWE career didn't live up to all the hype from the internet and his own self-promotion surrounding him going in and throughout. The three points raised were work rate, promos, and business/intelligence acumen. I think when it came to the first point on the work rate, I thought that was a clear victory for the prosecution, to be quite honest. I think that they did a great job illustrating the weaknesses of Punk, and with the burden of proof on them, I feel the defense fell somewhat short in illustrating Punk's strengths as a wrestler. I think the comparisons used weren't necessarily appropriate for the situation. I think that CM Punk... I think there was an argument there, but at the same time, I think the argument was stronger from the prosecution's standpoint on that point. When it comes to promos, I feel pretty much the exact opposite, in the sense that while numbers were used, and there were numbers used, there was a bit of trickery attempted with the numbers, including using an Independence Day number that was clearly bogus and flagrant. There were some numbers used when it came to Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, and following that were completely just, don't get me wrong, but when the point was raised by the witness statement about the role that booking played in that, the conversation turned to that, and I think that was an argument that the prosecution lost, because instead of trying to explain fully why the promos themselves were the failing of the angle, I thought the defense did a superior job of illustrating why it was the booking that was the failing of the angle. And I think that was a testament to Luke specifically on that point. The business, the intelligence, the acumen, the paving the way was a lot more murky for me. This is where I had the hardest time, because to me this is where the middle ground is. The plagiarism is completely in full effect, it's completely justified, whether or not that's a valid argument. I think the defense did a good job of illustrating that it wasn't, in the sense of there are people who have cherry-picked things from other people before. Ric Flair being specifically mentioned was a feather in the cap there of Luke, I think, on to reel that off. Of course, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers was the allusion made. The paving the way argument, I think, was not hit hard enough by the defense, to be quite honest. I think that was something that really could have been touched on, because the idea of paving the way specifically for NXT, to me, the line that I was waiting for you guys to draw was that Punk was the beginning of the booking for the niche that is the internet, that has then followed on with Daniel Bryan and is now clearly the hallmark of NXT, where they're, what they're trying to do is target the audience that they originally tried to target with Punk that they didn't try and target before. To me, that's the strongest case you can make for that, and I don't think that was made. Similarly speaking, I don't think that the counter-argument from the prosecution that it was Daniel Bryan was made explicitly enough either, considering the burden of proof was sitting on them, so to me that was a bit of a wash. No doubt that there are people that are involved now that perhaps wouldn't have been given a chance, but again, as the prosecution illustrated as well with the Freddie Joe Floyd reference, there are times in the business when people pull talent from everywhere because that's just the nature of the business at that given point in time. The scope of the debate I thought was very impressive. I think at times it delved into a relevancy for the topic that we're talking about today. I think that was a deliberate attempt by the prosecution to kind of pull it from a argument about fraud and misrepresentation to the personal agenda of whether or not you like them or not.
Not the gentle prosecution!
Whether or not the gait of the girl is relevant to the fact that he got over, because he clearly was, I don't think is a necessary point. To me, I think one of the key contributors was actually Air Raid, who summed it up well when he came to the charge in his own personal summary, when he said, based on the hype going in, he did do as an exceptional job as he possibly could of reaching a level that few expected going in. If the expectation and hype was that he was a great pro and could have great matches going in, he succeeded. I think quite easily he succeeded, and he had a career that far surpassed what anybody expected. But, as Air Raid also said, the ongoing charge deals with the ongoing nature of the hype and CM Punk's personal opinion of himself as well, which hinged on the argument of best in the world made by the prosecution, which is a difficult one to argue. And I think that was the failing of, not necessarily the failing of the defense, but certainly the strength of the prosecution was in illustrating the best in the world, subjective as that may be, which I was glad that word was used because I was looking for it from the defense, is something that not only is very hard to argue in any rational, reasonable way, but it's something that is very difficult to pin on CM Punk specifically, and since that was his own self-promotion, his own self-hype, whether it was with the wider image of it being a PR tag, like World's Strongest Man, like the Rattlesnake, I think that it's a very tough one to argue. And the bottom line was, I think that they did a good enough job of proving that he wasn't, in terms of the best in the world, during that period of time. It was a very aggressive prosecution, and to me, what makes this difficult is that split divide of CM Punk, and during his run as a tippy top guy, and CM Punk and the expectations of the internet going in, which one he succeeded on, one he failed on, and I think this is where it becomes difficult to me. And I think what actually sealed the decision for me, as tough as I find this, because I do think this is close, the prosecution had the line where they said the crux of the case is in his own high standards in that comparison to Brock Lesnar, to The Rock. But that alone was not the crux of the case as outlined in the charge. The charge was not just his own high standards. With that being the case, I had to go back to the 3 points the prosecution brought to the table. The work rate, which I thought the prosecution won. The promos, which I thought the defense won. And it comes down to the business intelligence and acumen. And I could not get past the fact, despite the fact that CM Punk did not achieve levels that are extremely difficult, extremely rare to reach, the Steve Austin, The Rock, Hulk Hogan, that tippy-top level that he wanted to put himself on, the intelligence part of their own argument was debunked very well by the defense. So, my verdict, officially, is that I find CM Punk, Phillip Brooks, not guilty.
Holy shit, Luke, you won.
It was an extremely...
the intelligence one was mostly you, if you recall.
Fucking shit, you won.
I am not easy in saying that. I think in terms of, again, I want to make this point clear. The arguments, the more strong, well-rounded argument was made by the prosecution. But the burden of proof sits on them, and when they brought 3 charges to the table, and that final one wasn't strong enough to swing it in their favour for me, and made that last one a wash, it makes it a tie. It makes it 1-1 and a wash, which means to me, there's reasonable doubt if that's the case. And if there's reasonable doubt, and it's not a slam dunk, to me, not guilty. And now I can finally... I can finally now throw it to you inside the courtroom studio what you truly feel about CM Punk now that the buff and bluster is out the way.
I will be lodging an appeal. When we're judging on best in the world, if any of those criteria fails, he's not the best in the world. And as a worker, if he's not the best in the world, it's guilty.
It's probably the best total package.
Even though it's hype, and granted it is hype, but it's not all the hype that we were talking about. It was CM Punk before, during, in that main run, the internet's expectations. It was far more rounded than just CM Punk saying he's best in the world. And when the argument gravitated to that for the prosecution, it left everything else open. Like I said, the rest of it wasn't strong enough. Even though that was the area where I said, I believe you won.
What I would argue, and I said this to Kieran outside, actually, it's something I wanted to include in the closing statement and didn't, was to me, if he's guilty at any stage, at any stage during that time frame in which the charge is framed, then he has to be found guilty. As you sort of alluded to there, towards the end, he didn't live up to his own high standards, and so for him to be not found guilty, I think he has to tick the box on everything.
I would say that, just dropping this in, interesting choice of three things to go for. Because I would have actually put the draw as one on its own. Because that was my thought, is that... Yeah. My three probably would have been work rate, interviews, and star power. Because you have to concede interviews. There's no way around it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're going to be... So I think that star power one... I don't think he ever really achieved the star power level.
The thing was, I think that star power kind of crossed over all of them. So it was,
maybe
it was that was, I think, yeah, it probably was.
I don't know. I just found so, that the money one ended up in the interview one, which was a bit weird.
Yeah, the theory was, work rate is the killer. That, and then obviously we have to address promos. So try and put a spin on it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then the third one was basically just going through the bullshit talk about Rock and stuff. His strength was interviews, so put the negative spin, and the negative spin was it didn't equate to the star in terms of numbers. So he was trying to take the obvious strength of it, where he was world class, and put it into a negative light as a reflection of star.
I appreciate that, actually. It was a bit muddled in presentation.
If we can make his biggest strength his negative,
the rest just falls
into place.
And it was, if we could get him on... The reason to break it up, because if we could get him on anything, then that would... The crux was we would channel it towards best in the world. It was the setting of that expectation going in.
Yeah.
Completely unprepared for that. So, mistrial.
I think, really, at the end, I think it wasn't an easy trial to judge. So I can appreciate, like, I was actually surprised when he actually says that he had difficulty.
There's no need for this, Gene. You won.
No, I didn't win. I didn't win. Luke won. Yeah, I think it was a difficult one because I didn't. When we first announced it was going to be CM Punk, I didn't really have any preference either way. It's just we just kind of fell into the defense just because of how much the prosecution really wanted to be the prosecution. Which, by the way, guys, like, because you couldn't see them, the expression on Kieran's face during this whole podcast was fucking gold in itself. It was just so hilarious to watch. Just the absolute intense hatred for him was just so brilliant.
It's in the eyes. It's in the eyes. Under the powdered wig, these eyes were glaring.
Bile that you had, just like you just try not to choke on the bile,
you know,
as you were saying.
The point of it was for me, the Cena thing is great to me because, as you say, the way the two of them were perceived by and still are by a certain segment of the audience. But like, you know, I love the Summer of Punk.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. I fucking listen to his song every single day on the
drive home.
It's
like the jilted girlfriend.
It was just so he just so underwhelming. He was just so hypocritical, and that's what turned me on him. I mean, I'll still mark out when he returns because I like wrestling and he's talented.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like the right way of going about it. If you guys won the first one and Luke won the second one, and then the third one was just this muddy kind of water, it does fall on. It's innocent until proven guilty, so he has to go with the non-guilty charge. So I understand why he went that way, and that's not just because like Luke won and so on. That's just generally like if I was stuck in that same position, I would have took that as well.
Yeah, well, that's probably our own failing there because we did have the approach that if we can just get him on one.
Yeah,
it disproves the best in the
world. Well, that's the thing. If you're going to put 3 points up, you can't just have one. You have to make sure you get. It's 2 out of 3 falls. You got to make sure you get two.
Well, yeah,
you have
I think
to drum home.
And
it's
pretty said the onus is on. Onus of proof is on the prosecution.
Yeah.
By framing it as best in the world, we were trying to flip that around on its head and put the onus.
I wrote that down in my book. Yeah. I was like reading it here. Best in the world. Burden of proof shifted on defense to prove. Because if you have to prove that he's the best in the world, then obviously it goes away from them having to prove. And it's like, I thought that was the swiftest move of the entire argument, was making it so that the defense had to prove it when clearly they were thinking of counterpunching going in.
I would just say again, just like I thought it was like an actual tricky one. I don't think it was quite as obvious as say the Hogan one. But then, you know, you can't get them all right. But I think, yeah, no, I think it's fair. And I guess we get to restart the sequence all over again, don't we?
We do.
Yeah, does that mean I'm a judge next?
It does.
Yeah, does that mean Shawn Michaels is next?
Bring it on.
When
yeah,
small
come
hey,
on.
I know.
Bring it on.
I know what our audience is thinking. Yeah. When yeah. small claims, fuckers.
Yeah. I will just state that I thought the prosecution were fucking hilarious. In their attack, even if it did kind of, as you said, diverted at times on a personal occasion, I just thought that was entertaining, hence the bamboozledness, because I was just stunned by it. I thought Luke was absolutely fantastic in this. I thought, like, the defense won because of him. And I just want to say, you have ruined now my defeated streak that I was building up. I was aiming for 0 and 21. Yeah, I was aiming for the taker streak, and now it's like fucking ruined now. So it's just, yeah.
I think again, just to reiterate, I thought a fantastic battle, a spirited battle, an absolutely vicious prosecution. I think of all the trials we've done so far, the most vicious prosecution, even more so than the Triple H trial.
Which put was these way. Guys together. What were you expecting?
I know,
they
but
hate life.
It's going to pale compared to the vicious and downright. Well, I'm not even saying the defense that's going to happen for Shawn Michaels. It's going to be unprecedented. Like, honestly, there's going to be people tweeting about this, and law firms will be getting in touch to the potential bullshit that will happen.
The only thing I would disagree on is the idea that if you could get him on one thing that disproved everything, because it's like, disprove him on one thing, it disproves a part of his career, certainly. But any wrestler is brave. You probably, on an isolated incident, get them wrong on something that they thought was great, that they know Bret Hart. The match with Shawn Michaels was not one of the greatest matches of all time at WrestleMania 12. I'm sorry, but that doesn't mean that he's not a great wrestler or was the best at one point in time.
But by the same token, and this is my fault again, something I mentioned to Kieran whilst you were doing your deliberation, was this notion of, but look how he built up so much from what he was when he came in. I thought, well, by that logic, every wrestler has improved from what they were when they came in.
And on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening. If we didn't get to your witness statement, if we didn't get to your feedback this time, I'd like to apologise. We did have 15 pages of it to get through, so there was an immense amount of feedback, a topic that elicited a lot of visceral reactions on both sides of the fence, as you can tell from this court case alone. A very difficult one to judge, but I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to thank all of the participants around the Oaken table. For Kieran O'Rourke.
Gee, you'll always be a loser in my eyes.
For Carl Jones.
But can I be your hero?
For G. John Chase.
You do realise Triple H is still on his own. There was a perfect opportunity for Punk to be his cellmate. Yeah. Come on! He's still on his fucking own. Poor Triple H.
And for the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour, yeah. Luke Edwards.
In a breaking of character. That was really good, guys. Thank you. I really enjoyed that debate and a total break of character.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here. Talk to you next week. The cult of personality.